Morning, everyone. I'm an alcoholic. The problem is, was, and will always be Leon. It's a privilege to be here, and I want to thank Milton and the delegates that selected me to be a part of this weekend. It's been a very spiritual weekend for me. I feel God's love here. I see it in the eyes of each and every one of you. I know God is looking at me through your eyes. And when each of you have shared, I have heard God's word through your lips. It took a long time for me to have an attitude of gratitude. It took a long time for me to humble myself. In the beginning, when I'd be asked to speak, it was an ego thing. Anymore, I realize this is God's way of humbling Leon Maines to be an instrument of his love and to try to express what he would like me to say, not what Leon would like to say. I came from a dysfunctional family, in that my father was an alcoholic. He never admitted it until shortly before his death. But he started drinking at age 18, and he drank until 83. He passed away at 85. And I learned through his behavior what it was like to do without. To see my father work all week long, and this back in the depression that I'm speaking of now, he worked 84 hours a week for $17 and come home on payday broke because he had stopped at his favorite pool hall and drank and gambled his money away. I didn't have a lot of the things that children had growing up, and I promised myself that I would never be like my father. Little did Leon know what was in store for him. And I kept that image up through high school until I went into the service. And it was in the service that I got tired of sitting in the barracks by myself and wanted to be a part of the in crowd. And I went to the beer garden with the rest of them. My first experience with it, I hated the taste, I hated the smell. But I truly loved the effects. It allowed me to be who I wanted to be. It allowed me all the false courage I needed to do things that I wanted to do. It allowed me to start the destruction of Leon. And I was so blind that I didn't know what was going on. It started out, I was just a periodic drinker, and then it got into a weekly drinker, and then it got into a daily drinker. And through that, the destruction of my past was, I had been married twice, and I'm married now to my third wife. Married to my first wife 7 years, my second wife 26 years, and I'm married to my current wife 13 years. In that, there was 9 children involved. And not one of them came here through love. I fathered those children through lust. Because I always wanted what I wanted, when I wanted, and wanted it now. I deprived my children and my families of love. I was anything but a responsible person. So much went on, and I couldn't quit. Though I wanted to, I knew that I was drinking too much. I knew I was doing things that wasn't normal. And I was going down this road of destruction. And I remember the first time that I got involved in a death trap. And I was a habitual liar. Lied constantly. And I was stationed at Fort Jackson, South Carolina. And I'd seen this little girl out the PX I wanted to date with. So I went home and told my wife, my first wife, that I was going to play cards with the boys all night. And she went for it. And about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I come tiptoeing in the house, get undressed and get in bed, and I'm saying to myself, man, I've got it made. She don't even know what time I got home. Next morning around 8 o'clock, she shook me on the shoulder and said, well, how'd you do last night? Did you win or lose? I said, I broke about even. She says, you're a damn liar. You went in the hole. And she snatched the covers back off of me, and I'm wondering what's going on, and I could see death in her eyes. And I looked down my body, and I had the prettiest pair of pink panties on me you ever laid your eyes on. Do you think that would stop an alcoholic from doing that behavior? I start justifying. I will never wear jockey shorts again. I'll wear boxer shorts. I won't get caught like this again. See? And it just kept on progressing, getting worse and worse as time went on. And finally, I started breaking into jails. And people want to know how you break into jails. Well, if you break the law, you will break into jail in most cases. I couldn't stay out of jails for some reason. I don't know why. But it was in January of 1970 when I was first introduced to this program. And I was in a jail cell. And they came around, one noted, we want to go to an AA meeting. And I'm no alcoholic. I don't need to go to AA. And I had a black cell partner. And he kept badgering me, come on, let's go. Let's get out of the cell. We can get out of the cell block. And I said, no, I don't want to go. He said, well, they serve coffee and donuts down there. And the coffee and donuts got me to my first meeting. And when I got there, you people were talking bad about Leon. I just knew my family had been to that jail and told every one of you everything I'd ever done all my life. Because you was telling my story. And I didn't realize, so sick, I didn't realize what you were saying was paralleling with my life. See? That's the sickness of it. You people needed it. I didn't. And I said I'd never come back to another AA meeting as long as I live. Well, the following Tuesday, the same black man for the same coffee and donuts got me to my second meeting. And I heard something. And it was negative that I heard. It wasn't positive. If I continue doing this AA thing, I'll get out of jail quicker. I'll get the law off my back. I'll get my family off my back. I'll get my employers off my back, because I had a lot of back problem then. See? But I'm here to tell you now, AA will not get you out of trouble. It will not get people off your back. It will not get you out of prison or jail. What it will do for you, it will allow you to change your attitude about life and you will be able to keep yourself out of jail and out of trouble and keep people off your back, because you will no longer live negatively, you will live positively. And this I found out, not then, because, see, I was so filled with denial that I was not willing to pick up the kit of spiritual tools that you people gave me. I was told to get a sponsor. I was told to have a big book. I was told to open and close my day with prayer. I was told to have a phone list. And I was told to call people. I was told to go to meetings regularly. Well, I got a sponsor, Don. At the time I asked him to be my sponsor in 1970, he had 28 years in this fellowship. A lovely man. But I never called him. He gave me my first big book and asked me to read and study it. And I put it on the shelf to collect dust. I had a phone list, and I didn't know where it was at because I never used it. I didn't know what it was to open and close my day with prayer because I didn't. And I went to meetings only when I needed one, and that wasn't very often. Consequent was, I had to do what a lot of us had to do. I had to go back to the battlefield and get that oak leaf cluster on my purple heart to qualify me to stand here this morning. And that was my last drunk. And that drunk, I never want to forget, because it's what keeps me sober today. When the fleeting thought of taking a drink crosses my mind, I remember that last drunk and everything that transpired through it. And it wasn't a pleasant last drunk. It was one that lasted for 13 months. And I went from 172 pounds to 116. I had quit eating, quit sleeping, did nothing but drink, pass out, and come to. I roamed from one side of this United States to the other. And I used to say that I was a good driver, and I was very lucky because I didn't have no accidents. I didn't run into anybody. Never giving credit where credit was due. See, at that time, my higher power was at work in my life. He was protecting me, to give me experience and knowledge of this disease called alcoholism, that one day I would be able to share my experience, strength, and hope with others just like me, that they may hear something to prevent them from going as deep down the road as I went. At the end of that trail, I was in Orlando, Florida, my home state, hometown, in a bar. And over a thin dime, a life was taken. A man asked me for a dime, and I told him to work for his own money like I did. He got mad and swung at me, missed. I hit him once. He fell over dead. And what does a good alcoholic do? Stand and face reality? Run. And that's exactly what Leon did. See, I had that alligator mouth and the bird dog behind. And I took off running. I stayed at large for a little over 30 days in Ocala National Forest, hid out, until reality set in and I couldn't live with myself any longer. And I decided to turn myself in, but before I'd done that, I had to see my wife, my children. Now, why did I want to see my wife and children? Was it because I loved and missed them? Hell no, I wanted sympathy. I wanted to bail me out. That was my ulterior motive for coming back to Memphis, Tennessee from Florida. But where was I at during those 13 months? If I was such a loving and caring father, where was I at then? Why all of a sudden, when we get in a tight place, we turn to our loved ones to bail us out? Denial. See? Denial. And I turned myself in, and I was extradited from Tennessee back to Florida on a second-degree murder charge. And it was during the time that the jury was out deciding what they were going to do with me that I humbled myself the first time and got on my knees and asked this thing they call a higher power, whoever it might be, to help me, to remove the desire to drink from me, to give me the strength to do His will, and to put somebody in my life I could help. And at that moment, it happened. And I didn't realize it happened for a while after. And suddenly I realized, man, I haven't wanted to drink. I haven't craved a drink. And I realized then that that had to come from somewhere outside of me. Left to my devices, I would drink. See, I realized I was powerless over alcohol and that my life was unmanageable. And backing up just a bit, at the jury's verdict on that was, I was found not guilty as charged, but guilty of a lesser charge, manslaughter, and given 15 years in Florida Penitentiary. And that's where Leon Maines stopped being a little boy and started becoming a man. Not because of prison, but because of this fellowship. See, I called Don up again, and I said, would you still meet my sponsor? He said, Leon, I haven't give up on you, but I've give out. I will be your sponsor on two conditions. And I said, what's that, Don? He said, you've got to quit that line. And you've got to quit crapping in your pants, sucking on a bottle. Are you ready to throw away the toys and grow up and become a man? I'm 43 years old, and he's calling me a boy, and I resented it. And I said, what do you mean, boy? He said, you're acting like a 13-year-old, snotty-nosed brat. And he was right. But at the point in time, he was wrong. See? But he was right. My every action was very asinine and juvenile. I look at my grandchildren today, a couple of them that are sort of having some problems, and I see Leon. I see him. And I have compassion for them. And I hope that they don't follow my path like some of my children did. You know, for a man to call himself a man is one thing, but for a man to be a man is another thing. And what keeps us from being a man? It's fear. Fear. It's fear of rejection, fear of acceptance, fear of not being good enough, fear of not having enough. It comes in 100 different forms. It was fear that prevented me from taking the bull by the horns and working this program in 1970. I went 4.5 years dry. I cannot take credit for one day of sobriety during that time because I had none. All I did was quit drinking. I didn't change. And we get the spiritual growth in this program through change. That's the only way it comes. You've got to stop doing the things you were doing and do the things that God would like for you to do. And it's not an easy job. Don told me, yes, I'll be your sponsor. And he said, we're going to go to work. And we're going to study. And we're going to read that big book. And we're going to know what the big book is saying to us. We're going to study the 12 and 12 and know what it's saying to us. We're going to do a lot of things. And he asked me, he said, are you willing to go to any lengths? And I said, I'll try. Because I didn't know how far I could go. I didn't know how well I could stand up. Don was one of us, and he identified with me so well. He was born in Akron, Ohio, knew Bill and Bob personally. But in his personal life, he was a banker, and he had embezzled the bank and was caught and given 10 years. When he got out, the town had divorced him. His family had divorced him. Everybody he knew had divorced him. He was alone. And he wanted to know what was he going to do. And he decided he'd be a professional bum. And he started selling addresses for a quarter to other bums where they could sleep all night without being busted. And then he found this 4-story office building with a basement, and he went to them, and the cunning people we are, the con artists we are, he talked them into buying a coffee pot, cups, coffee, cream and sugar. Keep it in the basement, and he'd be there every morning and make coffee and serve it to all the offices in that building for a nickel a cup. When he passed away, he was a self-made millionaire from zero. AA didn't give it to him, but AA gave him the opportunity to change his attitude. Gave him an opportunity to grow up. Gave him an opportunity to accept life on life's terms. Gave him an opportunity to help this individual. And many more just like. You see, Don was a father I never had. I had a father, a good father, but he was one of us. And he did the best he could do with what he had. He was never there for me. He never understood me. And Don did. Don loved me. till I could love myself. When he left and went to that big meeting in the sky, I couldn't hardly think it. He had molded me into the person I am today. He'd give me hope. He'd give me inspiration. He'd give me a design for living contained in this big book. And we take this big book for granted, as I did. And we take it home and we put it on a shelf and it gets dusty on the outside. But when you crack it open, it's brand new on the inside. We don't realize that we're abnormal people. We will always be abnormal. Normal people would not be sitting here this morning in an AA meeting. They wouldn't have to. But we'll always be abnormal till the day we die. And I'm proud that I'm abnormal, because I've found something that a lot of normal people can't find. See? He carried me through these steps. And he made me understand who I was, why I was doing the things I was doing, and who made all this possible. See, that's step one for me. Was easy to admit that I was powerless over alcohol and my life was unmanageable. But it was hard to accept that I couldn't drink like a normal person, that I wasn't living like normal people. And once I was able to accept those things as it was, and then I had to go one step further. And I just recently realized this in my life, that it isn't just accepting the fact that my life is unmanageable, that I'm powerless. It's unacceptable. The things I were doing were unacceptable. Now what is Leon going to do about them? Am I going to leave them like they was? And you see, this higher power that restored my sanity in step two, he done it that day when I realized on my knees that the compulsion to drink had been removed. And that's when I started becoming open-minded. And I realized there was a power outside of myself that made all things possible. Sanity for Leon is knowing and accepting the truth. I know that I'm powerless over alcohol, and I know my life is unmanageable, and that's the truth. Now, what am I going to do about it? I had to become willing. I had to become willing to turn my will and my life, which the will is the first half of step one, my life is the second half of step one, over to this power I discovered in step two. In essence, I had to fire Leon and hire God. He became my personal manager. And as long as I keep Leon fired and God hired, things work out good. But when I get back in the driver's seat, I become disarray. I become self-willed unright. See? And have nothing to live for. So I have to surrender every morning to my God. And I have to ask Him every morning to help me through this 24 hours. And to put somebody in my life I can help. I have to do that. Didn't. Today I want to. My day isn't complete if I don't roll out of the bed on my knees and ask my God to help me. And He's never let me down. And I remember when we started through the steps, Don told me, said, Leon, every day for the rest of your life, I want you to do a good turn for somebody and don't tell anybody about it but God. And I wonder, how in the world am I going to meet that many people to do a good turn for every day? He says, it's simple. Ask God in the morning. And God has never let me down. Never. There has not been a day passed in nearly 22 years that God hadn't put somebody in my life I can help without taking credit for. And after that third step prayer, it tells you what? Next, we launch off on a vigorous course of action. Primarily a house cleaning of your personal life. And none of us, if you were like me, want to do that. We don't want to look at ourselves. We don't want to be what? Honest with ourselves. I can be cash register honesty. That's one thing. But being honest from within, knowing when I'm lying to myself. And that's not an easy job for Leon to do, to be honest with myself. But step four was important, and it brought that out for me. It showed me a lot of things that I didn't understand about Leon. It introduced me to these things they call the seven deadly sins that most of us don't pay any attention to. Most of us don't even know where they're at. Some of them never heard of them. It was a long time before. And then once I heard about them, I didn't know what to do with them. I didn't know where to find them. And I'd asked Don, I said, where are they at? And he says, they're in the books. I said, but where in the books? He said, they're in the books. He wasn't going to tell me. He wanted me to read and find. He wanted me to educate myself. And I find that I've got to unlearn everything that I learned in the first 43 years of my life. He even told me that on the front end. We were going to a meeting one night, and he said, Leon, there isn't but one thing I know or I can see that you need to change about yourself. And boy, I had to ask that stupid question. What's that? And he said, every damn thing about you. And he was right. Absolutely right. You know, there were things that come out in that fourth step that I wasn't aware of. I just knew all these names I'd written down were people who had offended me or abused me or done me wrong. And when I started going through those columns, as it's suggested in the big book, I come to find out 95% of the time I was the culprit. I was the one who was responsible for my resentments. I was the creator of them. And I was unwilling to do anything about them. I carried that first edition to my sponsor, and he looked at it and said, "No, this isn't going to do." And I looked at him, "Why?" He said, "Do you remember the other day we were talking about so-and-so?" "Yeah." He said, "It isn't on there." In about 5 seconds, he listed about six things that we had openly discussed that should have been a part of my fourth step. In my sick mind, I'd forgot about them and didn't have them a part of. See, I had that selective amnesia. Forget the stuff I wanted to forget, see, and not put on there. And he sent me back home to do some more work, which I did. And I brought the second edition to him. He looked at him and accepted it. And we proceeded to do the fifth step. Now, Don lived in a retirement community in Florida and he lived in a big double-wide trailer. And on the side, he had built a screened-in porch. And out in front of his screened-in porch, he had this little pool that he had made, had water and goldfish in, and he had a little man-made mountain up there and a little man-made waterfall that he had made and a pump in there. He'd go out on his serenity porch, that he called it, and turn the waterfall on, and it was real serene. Inside, he had the slogans on this porch that you see in all the fellowship halls that we go to. And he had the little desk in there. And in that little desk, it was filled with AA literature, books, medallions that anybody, needy person that didn't have a book or celebrate a birthday and couldn't get a token, Don Sr. got it. And all of this he bought out of his pocket, his expense. And he said that he could spend the rest of his life buying for AA and never repay the debt. Never repay the debt. He had to give away what was given to him. And we sat on that porch and we done my fifth step, and it took the better part of the day. And at the end of it, he asked me, "Is there anything else that you want to add?" "No." Well, see, Don knew me. He knew me real well. I can remember a time we were sharing in a meeting, and he was at the far end of the table, and I was at this end, and I was running my mouth, and he just bladed out, "Leon, quit that damn lying." He knew I was not telling the truth. And he asked me three or four times. And finally he just looked me eyeball to eyeball and he said, "Leon, I believe you're a victim of incest. And I like to fill off the damn chair." It had never parted my lips. Never. That I was going to carry to my grave. He said, "But Leon, I can't help you. You need professional help. And I seek professional help. Today I can stand before a group of people like this and express the thing that keyed the whole problem I had off was that one incident in my life that ruined my self-esteem. It caused me to become a liar. It caused everything that happened in my life to happen. And I carried that around on my back and in my heart all those years, killing myself. and didn't realize it. And Don found that key, and he turned it, and my heart opened up. And he told me, he said, "Leon, normally I send my sponsees home for an hour to review what has been done, reread the first 5 proposals, think about it, and then do your 7th step prayer. But I'm going to have you stay on my porch." Because at the time I was living in Orlando, and Ocala is about 60 miles away. And I stayed on his Serenity porch for that hour and thought about what I'd just done. And done my 7th step prayer. 6 revealed to me my defects of character. And those defects of character are these 7 deadly sins that I'd mentioned. The pride, the greed, the lust, the anger, the gluttony, the envy and sloth. And I was eat up with them. And they were activated by what? Fear. Every one of them, fear activate. I was too proud to ask Jim to help me because I knew Jim was going to reject me. See? I was too proud to ask Sparky, "What should I do about this?" Because I knew Sparky was going to say, "I can't help you." See? All through life, that false pride of mine prevented me from excelling in a lot of things. And why was I greedy? Fear. Fear that you was going to have more than I have. See the apple pie sitting on the table, and real quick I eat all the damn pie I can eat so you don't get any. See? And don't even know we're doing it. Have no explanation for it at the time. And I found that lust isn't just about sex. Anytime you lust for anything in excess, anything, it could be money, it could be clothing, it could be automobiles, it could be homes, any luxury of life that you want in excess is lust. And I was guilty of it in every area. Every area. And didn't realize it. Anger. I like what Tommy H. says all the time. That he had no problem with anger because he was angry all the time. See? And that was me. I stayed angry all the time at different levels. Could not contain it. I had a very short fuse, and it showed the short fuse I had on that night when the man asked me for the dime. See? Instead of acting, I reacted. And it caused me a heartache of trouble. And glutton, I was always a glutton. Hell, I never knew when I had enough. What is enough? Huh? More, more, and more. And it's amazing how we keep reaching out. When I was drinking, and come time to go home and couldn't walk, I'm still wanting a 6-pack for the road. Or go outside and upchuck to make room so I can drink some more. I've done it many times, run my finger down my throat so I could drink some more. Stupid. Absolutely stupid. Envy, I envied every one of you. I wanted Danis's clothes or his ability to run. I wanted anything out of life that you had. Sometimes I'd get it through greed. See? And all these things, sloth. Why were we slothful? What is sloth? Lazy. Flat lazy. That's all there is. And I was always lazy. I remember Don telling me one time, said, "Leon, there's only one thing lazier than you are, and that's the mattress you lay on." See? And that prevented me from overcoming these, see, the slothfulness. That's why I didn't get this program, sloth. See? Now, how am I going to take care of these? You know, you hear people say 6 and 7 is the same, and it's not. It is not. 6 is the bad things about me that I have that I need to get rid of or control. 7 are the things I have a lack of. Love, compassion, tolerance, patience, responsibility, and the list goes on and on and on. If I put these to work in my life, I can offset my defects of character. How can somebody love me if first I don't love myself? I remember Don asked me, he says, "Do you love yourself?" And I said, "Sure." And he says, "You're a liar." He said, "If somebody persecutes yourself the way you have and you love yourself, impossible." "Do you love your wife?" "Sure I do." He said, "Liar." "I'd sure, all the heck you've put her through, it's impossible for you to love her." "Do you love your children?" "Certainly." "Liar." "Look at them. Inadequate clothes, inadequate food. You've never been there for them, and you love them." And that was a big pill, a big piece of humble pie I had to eat. And I destroyed the love of my children for their father through my selfish, self-centered ways. This morning I have my oldest daughter here with me. She's got 3 years in this fellowship. In February of 96, she was in a dilemma with a divorce from her first husband. And it was a nasty divorce. And she was having problems, so I invited her out the house to have supper with Wanda and I. And while I was there, Mark, a sponsee of mine, called, and he said, he always called me Pop. He said, "Pop, are you going to Turning Point tonight?" And I said, "No, Margie's over here. I'm going to stay home and visit with her." And Margie spoke up and says, "No, Dad, I want to go to a meeting." And I asked her, "Are you serious?" She said, "Yes." I carried her to that meeting. And she hadn't missed a Monday night, to my knowledge, since. And she makes a lot of other meetings throughout town. Makes a lot of meetings. And she finally got a sponsor she's willing to work with, like I did. And now she's got sponsors working that she's working with. And this is how this chain works. I can't keep this program unless I give it away, like it was given to me. And this is part of that step 7, when I reach out to help someone else and get out of myself. And it isn't an easy job. It's a hard job to say no anymore. Used to, I could say no in a minute. But somebody asked me, "Leon, will you help me with so-and-so?" I have a very, very hard time saying no. Rudy is my current sponsor, and he tells me all the time, "Leon, you work with too many people. I don't see how you do it." But I found this. God only puts on me what I can bear. He only puts so many people, the right amount of people He keeps in my life at all time, and he spreads them out to where so many of them call here, so many of them call there. It never has been where they all call at one time. If it did, I'd go crazy. See? He takes some away from me, and He replaces them. It's all His doing. It's not mine. And if it wasn't for these people, I wouldn't be here this morning. I realize that. It's called service work. Service work, just showing up in this meeting like all of us have this morning, that's service work. But we don't give credit for that, you know. Or I didn't, I should say. And making that list, I've heard it said, once you do a fourth and fifth step, burn it. If you do that, how in the world are you going to know who you got to make amends to? Huh? You've got it made right there on your fourth step. And I had to make that list. And see, steps 1 through 8 prepare me for 9. Which is the most important step of those 9, other than 1. You got to take 100%, no doubt about it. The rest of them you do the best of your ability. But 9 removes you from that bondage of self. When you clear the wreckage of your past up, and you're able to look life right dead in the eyes and be happy, joyous, and free. And you can't. And if you don't do those things, I promise you will get drunk. I've seen it happen over and over again. And I was one of those ones that defied that principle. And I got drunk. See? And once I got to that point in my life, Bill and Bob were intelligent enough to realize, how is Leon going to not get these balls back in his gut? How is he not going to keep doing what he was doing? And they put 10, 11, and 12, the living steps, I call them. Every day I have to review my day and see who I've offended or hurt. And immediately take care of the situation, if necessary. Never before did I have feelings for anybody. If I offended you, come hell or high water, I would not apologize. I'd burn in Hades before I would. Today I find it very comforting to apologize for a wrong action when I've committed it. And it's necessary. And you can look at people who are working this program the way they're supposed to, and you know it. There's a special glow about it that you see and you hear from a person that is truly from here, not here, working this program. It's a God gift. He makes a lot of us special. And the people here this morning are very special. You wouldn't be here. That's why this retreat is so beautiful. Because God's got His selected few here to recharge our batteries so we can go back home and continue our work with others. This is a very inspirational spiritual place to come to. I can't think of another place I go that I get as much out of as right here. And I'm so grateful that a few years back, Milton asked me to come up here. And we haven't missed since that first time, and don't plan on missing in the future. Wanda and I really love this place. Prayer and meditate, I never did that. Didn't know what it was. Never did. And it's very comforting today for me, and very necessary for me to meditate about my life. Where do I stand? What do I need to do? What do I need to improve? Who can I help? And ask God to give me the strength to do His will, not mine. And I find it best for me to do that when I'm at total peace with God and myself, away from TV, telephone, radio, people, just quiet one-on-one talking to my God. And He answers me, constantly answers me. In His time, not in Leon's time, but in His. And I couldn't have the spiritual awakening that the big book talks about in step 12 unless I'd done the 11 steps prior to it. There's a difference between a spiritual awakening and a spiritual experience. My first spiritual experience was the day that God removed that obsession to drink from me. And He's given me many, many since. Just working with some people has been a spiritual experience for me at times, because it's pointed out to me some things I need to work on that I was sloughing on. And I can look in the mirror, and I finally realize that there's been a profound alteration in my attitude towards life. And the only way it came about was from a power outside of myself. I couldn't do it by myself. And to carry the message to other alcoholics. See, the purpose in life for Leon, and I know it within my heart, and I'll go to my grave believing that God's intention for me is to stay sober and work with other alcoholics. He allowed me to do all the crazy stuff I did to give me experience so I could work with others. And I've worked with sponsors, and they say, "How do you know that?" Well, if I've lived it, that's how I know it. And they think they can pull something cute over me, and they don't do it. And they wonder how. And I tell them, you can't BS a BSer. See? And it's real neat. I am so blessed with life. See? I'm probably the richest man in the world today because I finally found out who Leon really is. And there's no amount of money that can give me what this program in God has given me. No amount. Money can't buy it. Money can't even buy love, and I've tried that too. It don't work. I had to learn. Wanda is a black belt Al-Anon. And she has got a philosophy that I've had to adopt. She stays out of my business, and I stay out of her business. She has her meetings, and I have my meetings. She has her program, I have my program. She has her sponsees, I have my sponsees. Now, we sometimes get together on what you would call an open meeting at the house and break bread. Or we may go out and break bread, but we do not interfere with one another. And I was always the manipulator, trying to control, and she would allow it. And I can remember asking her over and over again at different times, honey, fix me a cup of coffee. And she'd do it, break her little legs off, going to do it. Today I say it, she'd get up and make your own damn coffee. She will in the morning fix my first cup, but after that I'm on my own. But it's been good for me. See? It's been good for me. It's taught me how to live. It's taught me how to accept. I have to think not what Wanda can do for Leon, but what Leon can do for Wanda. And that's what love is. When I am considerate and think, what can I do to make her happy? That is love. And it, you know, for a long time, I thought, what can she do to make me happy? See? But she's got to take that action. I can't. Again, I can't thank God enough and the fellowship for the gift that He has bestowed upon this individual. And in closing, I'd like to say that I'm not the man that my mother had hoped I would be, nor am I the man I wanted to be, but by the grace of God and the AA fellowship, I'm a better man than I used to be. Thank you, and God bless you.